history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, a program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some pretty incredible stories and some pretty incredible people we have the privilege of meeting. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as we take that journey, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and so often we end up inspired by these tales from our greatest generation. The gentleman you're going to meet today is 98 and a half years old, but you'd never believe it if you saw him driving down the street or walking around his car museum in Santa Fe Springs, California. Phil Reed is our guest today, and Phil, you didn't grow up in Southern California. Much different weather where you're from. Tell me about your childhood.
Well, I came from Northern Michigan, Upper Peninsula, Copper Country, they called it. It's right close to Lake Superior. In fact, you could almost see Lake Superior from where we live. I didn't get to graduate from high school. I did 1 year in high school, and it was due to depression, and my dad needed some, he was getting laid off and needed some extra money, so I went to the CC camp.
Well, and I guess we should tell people, since you mentioned the depression, I mean, the depression was hard on all Americans, but when you're one of 13 kids, it had to be really tough on your family.
It was, yeah, it was.
Where do you fit into that birth order of the 13? Well,
I'm the third from the bottom.
And you're the last one living?
Yeah, my sister just died a couple years ago. She was 97.
Well, what do you remember about those depression years? Did it feel tough to you, or was it just what you knew?
Well, you just took it as it was, you know. You didn't have much clothes. You had just a small shirt, and you walked to school a mile and a half, and you came back for lunch, and you had to go back again to school, and no matter what it was, it could be a snowstorm. You still had to go.
And Northern Michigan is no stranger to snowstorms.
No, it used to average of 150 inches of snow a year.
Ooh. So you just told us 1 year of high school, and then you quit to go to the CC camp so you could help support your family.
Yes. We got $30 a month, and $25 went to your parents, and you got to keep $5 a month. And you had to buy your haircut and everything else with that $5.
Mm-hmm. And I bet as a teenager doing that, you couldn't have fathomed owning all these unbelievably unique and impressive cars that you have in your collection.
Yeah, I started from scratch. And my wife is from England. I met her during a war over there, and she was a great help to me. I'd go out looking for work, and she'd answer the phone for me, and we lived on about $5 a week. She'd get the meals every day. We sat down to dinner, and she really took care of me.
Quite a team. And sorry for bouncing around on you there, but so you mentioned the Civilian Conservation Corps. Which camp did they send you to, and what were you doing?
It was in Camp Kogebic near Ishpeming, Michigan, and my job was a mechanic. I went in with a friend of mine, and the friend of mine told the foreman that I was a mechanic because I was working on cars when I was 10 years old with my dad. I learned how to scrape bearings in and everything else you had to do. And so he taught me a lot on a Model T, and I was driving a Model T when I was 10, 11 years old.
And you're still driving Model Ts.
I'm still driving Model Ts, yeah.
They might look a little different than the one you were tinkering around with.
Yeah.
Boy, I'm just getting the idea that you must have been a tough kid because you had a lot of tough jobs and tough things to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah, you had to do it to get by, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not like today. It's a different world.
And I know it's been a long time, but if you can go back those 80-plus years to the teenage version of Phil Reed, do you remember any ambitions you had or thoughts that something you wanted to do with your life?
Well, I've always wanted to be a mechanic. Like I say, I was working on Model T Fords and helped my dad. Like I say, he taught me how to scrape bearings in and how to time a car and taught me how to drive a car. And I just wish he was alive today to see what's happening.
I'm sure he can see from where he is, and I'm sure he's very proud. And I'm sure there are other things that he'd be proud of. So you go to the CCC camps then, and before too long, there's a war coming. Do you remember how you heard about Pearl Harbor?
Yes, I had a little 1936 Plymouth convertible, and I was going to pick up my girlfriend to take to the midget races. Just not even up there yet, and I didn't know where Pearl Harbor was, and I didn't know anything what's happening. And I was working for Douglas Aircraft as a tool and jig builder. When the war broke out, my friend and I said, we're going to go. So we were going to sign up, and the foreman said, if you sign up and go in, we're going to put you in the Army, and you'll be in the worst part of the Army. So he wouldn't let me quit, you know, building tools.
Which I'm sure he could get you an exemption for, right, since it's defense-related?
Well, yeah, he did. That's what he already did. And I worked there for about 9 months, and I couldn't stand it any longer. So I got my 36 Plymouth, and I went to a junkyard, and I found a big 30-gallon gas tank because gas was rationed at that time. And friends of mine gave me some extra stamps, so I had 30 gallons plus what was in the car, almost 50 gallons of gas. I headed for Michigan. Got there, and the next day I told my mom I'm going to go in the Navy. And my brother was just graduated from high school, and he said, I'm going to go with you. And so we went to training camp in Great Lakes down to Norfolk, Virginia, and got on this ship. And I didn't know what it, I thought it was a tugboat. And they were taking us up to get on our new ship at New York Shipyards.
How long were you and your brother able to stay together?
Well, that's the trouble. See, we got to go all the way to Bizerte, Africa. Captain says, we got to take your brother off and put him on another ship. Because at that time, the Sullivan brothers, all five of them, got killed.
They were on the USS Juno, which was sunk, and all five of them died. Mm-hmm. So because the government didn't want any other families losing multiple sons at once.
Yeah, so he took them off and he put them on another LCI 188.
So you both were on the same kind of ship but couldn't be on the same ship together anymore.
Yeah.
How'd you feel about that? How'd you react to that?
Well, he didn't like it, really, but he couldn't do nothing about it.
I guess I should ask you, too, if you're one of 13 siblings, was that the only one of your siblings who was in the service during the war, or were there more?
Yeah.
Just the two of you?
Yeah.
All right. But your mom had probably trusted you to look out for your little brother.
Yeah. He was just 18 years old. He didn't want to go. He's just about crying to stay. But they said, no, he was a better sailor than me. He never got seasick. And I got seasick the minute we left Norfolk, Virginia.
That must not have been fun in the Atlantic.
And you had to stand watch regardless. Uh-huh. And I had to go down the engine room. The engine room had 8 671 diesel engines in quads, 4 on one side, 4 on the other side, port and starboard.
How hot did it get down there?
It used to get hot because there was no ventilation at all down there, nothing. All you had was the stairway going up.
Well, and I'm guessing some people listening, when they hear you say LCI, they might not know what that means. They might think that's a phone company or something.
No, it's a landing craft infantry. Mm-hmm. We carried 250 troops. The thing is, there's 8 mechanics down there. And all the rest came out of school as second class. So I just happened to go by the engine room, and a guy came up out of there, and he says, I don't like this down here. It's too noisy. It's too stinky. And he says, you want to trade? He didn't even know me. So he said, I'm going to go see the captain. So he went and seen the captain. Captain asked me, he said, do you know anything about the engines? I said, yeah, they've been around all my life. Mm-hmm. So first thing what happened, we were going to cross overseas, and we weren't gone very far, and all the port side engines stopped, and the guys in the engine room didn't know what was wrong. They couldn't figure it out. So I figured out what was wrong. It was the filters, oil filters. So I fixed the oil filters, and the captain came down and says, I'm going to make you second class. He made me second class before I went overseas. And going across, one of the guys turned the wrong valve. We had a water tank up on deck, fresh water, and the guy didn't know. He turned the wrong valves and shut the water off to all the port side engines, and it burnt the water pumps all out on all of them. They were halfway across the ocean at that time. Somebody kept hollering for me, and I went down there, and they couldn't figure out where the smoke was coming from. It was all kinds of smoke just from the rubber burning in the water pumps. So we only had one spare water pump. So I changed that water pump, and we got over to Africa, and the captain says, I'm making you first class. So it was first class in less than 2 months.
Well, it sounds like if you weren't aboard ship, they never would have made it to Africa.
That's right. Yeah, we did all the invasion of Sicily, uh-huh. Salerno, Anzio, and Normandy.
Yeah, some very significant moments in World War II.
He broke a crankshaft in Anzio. It was the captain's fault, really, because he was delivering orders to other ships. We were, and he would go up there full stern, and full stern, a crankshaft let loose and broke. So I shut that one off, and it would still run on 7 engines. It would run on 1 engine if you had to. So he said, how are we going to get the engine out? He said, you have to unbolt all that steel above the engine and get something to pull the engines up. So I said, I can do that. I can fix that engine. So he stripped it down where it was, took the rest of it out, put it on the runway right in the engine room, and I put that new crankshaft in it and fired it up and just took right off. And that's the only problem we had at them engines. I tell you, I worked around with my dad, and I guess I was born to be a mechanic.
Boy, it sure seems like it. So, landing craft infantry carrying 250 troops at a time, but it's not like there's a welcome party on the beach letting you guys in.
And it was rough.
And we're going to hear about the rough stuff when we come back because it's time for our first break. 98-year-old Phil Reed is our guest today. He served on LCI 35 during World War II. And you'll find a short video relating to that at hometownheroesradio.com or on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. His car museum will always be better experienced in person, but there are some photos and video of that online as well. When we come back, what did Phil experience on that landing craft at places like Sicily, Salerno, Anzio, and yes, Normandy? He was there on June 6, 1944, as well as the weeks and months that followed, and we'll hear about it straight from the source when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.